Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and I'm super excited about today's episode. But before we get into it, I just want to ask a small favor. If you can go over to the podcast platform that you listen to this episode on, we'd love for you to give us a five-star review, because what that does, that helps us grow our audience and hopefully positively impact more people as well. So if you could do that. And also, we've got something exciting. So Growing with Gratitude is about to release a AI app or platform called Wellbeing Wizard. Now, it's really exciting. It's designed for teachers and wellbeing leaders to create world-class lessons and games, practicing wellbeing skills such as gratitude and empathy, tailored for age groups. And it also has a feature where we can tailor our learning programs for individuals who maybe need extra assistance. It links it to the curriculum that you follow. It can create Pixar style videos to teach the key concepts to the students as well. And that's just a few of the features. It's got a lot of other ones as well. And that's coming out really soon. So keep an eye out for that. We'll put the link for a waiting list in the show notes as well. And I think we can get into the episode now. So without further ado, I want to introduce today's guest. Now, Vikas Pawar is a seasoned senior school educator at Shivnada. Now, Shivnada is in India, in Delhi, and we had the principal, Samir Arora, on episode 40. Now, the reason I wanted to get Vikas on is because I wanted to hear about what they do at the school from a teacher's perspective. Now, he shares some great insights about what they do, some practical activities about what they do within the classrooms with the students and as staff. And he's been there for 9 years, and it's not a culture that's been built overnight. It's something that takes time. And what I want to highlight is that schools are on different journeys of wellbeing. I reckon it's fair to say that the majority of schools do something in the space, whether that's positive education or wellbeing education or whatever it might be. But everyone is on their journeys and at different levels. So what I loved about our conversation is particularly about how Vikas went into that it's not about values in a document. All right, that's a good starting point, but it's about the daily actions that take place to live by those values. And that can happen, that needs to happen over time. And that's what we talk about, like it's not, that's how we talk about when we develop that culture, it happens every day. So it's not just individual, I guess, time where we allocate a lesson for it. It's just what the school does. Now, that's good to say, but that takes time. And what I like is about Vikas gives some insights about what Shivnada had done from a teacher perspective over a long period of time. So really excited for this episode. I think you'll take a lot away from it. And without further ado, welcome, Vikas.
Thank you, Ash. Great to be here with you.
Excellent. So I wanted to get you on just to talk about how you implement wellbeing education in your teaching. But first of all, though, I wanted just to hear a bit more about your background, how you got into education, where you're from, and yeah, a few details about yourself.
Yeah, well, I am from India. I was born and brought up in the capital city of Delhi. And my schooling and education is from one of the very good schools. I mean, Springdale's it is called. It is still there and it's thriving like anything. Once I did my schooling, my graduation, well, if I talk about my post-grad actually, more to do that, I did it from the Delhi School of Economics. It's in our Delhi University. And two interesting subjects I had, that's geography and history. And but point is what, you know, let me say, struck me most with the kind of atmosphere we had in the Delhi School of Economics was not just the atmosphere of the campus itself, but two of my educators who I think had the biggest influence in whatever little I might know today. And it was, we used to talk about anything and everything. I mean, it was not just about history and geography. In fact, that used to be things which we would talk, you know, when we had nothing else to talk about. But there were so many other things about life, about poetry for that matter, about well, I mean, you know, how to go about things in life, what life is all about. Because I, at that point in time, you know, I mean, postgrad, young guy, and my educators had seen life, and the fact that they were not just teachers of a subject, but they were teachers of students or individuals is what was important for me. So that's stuck with me, and I still remember one day when one of my professors asked me, you know, that what do you want to do after you grad, you know, do postgraduate? Because normally in Delhi University, would be many people would want to join the university as, you know, as an educator. But I don't know, instinctively it was that I wanted to start in schools. So I was like, I don't know, I didn't have to do second thoughts for that. So and I think. From that very day, after I passed out from you know, my postgrad, and one day I went to my former school, my alma mater, and met the principal, and we were just talking. So she asked me, "Why don't you try you know, taking a grade 12 class?" Well, it was a shock to me because I was not ready for that. I said, "I have just come out of postgrad, and I have no idea about teaching, and that also straight away grade 12." She said, "It's okay. You take 1 week, prepare, and then come and do it." Well, I said, okay. I mean, again, instinctively, I said, okay, yeah, I mean, I'll try that. Why not? So I did that. And since then, it's been 25 years now. And I don't think I have, you know, regretted even one day of it. In fact, I think I've grown. And one of the best things which keeps me going is the connect with my students and the students themselves. And it's, I think this is a few of these things which I got from my professors in my postgrad, where, you know, I still remember I used to be less in my classroom and more with them outside. And I still remember that one incident, if I may add here. One day we were sitting with one of my professors outside our college canteen in a small garden. And, you know, we used to have a tree there. And I was telling him, I said, if one day our HOD comes and sees us sitting here, he's going to come and ask you that these guys are not sitting, they're not seen in my class, but they're sitting out here with you. What do you keep telling him the whole day? So he said, don't worry, I'll look into it. So one day, actually, this happened. Our HOD was coming and he did ask the exact same thing. The reply my professor gave was, I talked to them that how would this tree grow if there was no water? So I was like, okay. So since that day, we were not asked why we are outside. And I think that connect is what, you know, stayed with me. And I think that's how this, I've always, you know, believed in those three C's of connect, convey and convince. So before, once you connect, only then can you convey, and only then can you convince, right? So yeah,
interesting. It's really interesting to hear everyone's background and how they got into education and how their, I guess, their philosophies come about. And you had some, sounds like you had some fantastic mentors that were teachers and educators in your life that have, I guess, impacted that you wanted to be a teacher as well. And so, Vikas, what I want to do now, like a couple, or episode 40 it was, I had your principal, Samir Arora, on as a guest, and he's the principal of Shivnada, where you're a teacher at now. Yeah. So we got the school leader perspective. Now, as a teacher at the school, I'm really interested to find out, as a teacher, how you think about and implement wellbeing across the school. So I guess, why do you think well-being matters, and what the importance of prioritizing well-being in education? What's your thoughts around that?
You know, this reminds me, once I was listening to a kind of a episode, and in some documentary, and it was a real life scene, where it's a classroom scene, where a teacher is, you know, has come and asked the students that, you know, what would you want to be when you grow up? Right. So everybody is busy writing something. I won't, you know, whatever. There's one child who's sitting in the corner and is not saying anything, has his head down, and is not doing anything for that matter. So once everybody's written, so she takes the, you know, responses. Somebody says, I want to be a doctor, I want to be this, I want to be that, everything. So after she's read out, then she notices the child who's sitting at the corner, and she asks him, I mean, my dear, you did not write anything, you did not say anything. What would you want to be when you grow up? So I think that was the best answer anybody could give. He said, when I want to grow up, I want to be happy. So I think this is what, you know, for me is the first step towards well-being. Because if you're not happy in what you are, what you want to be and what you will be, I don't think the rest of things would fall in place. Because I out of experience, I have seen, I think it's, if My students are not emotionally, mentally in there. I cannot expect them to be academically in there, right? So it's, and if I look at, you know, I can't compare from the time I was growing up and today's time. But in fact, in today's time, sometimes I tend to say hats off to you guys that how do you manage so many things? Because there's so much going at home. The dynamics of home have changed. So many things happening in school. The dynamics of going to college and competition has changed. So all that baggage, plus all that rigor, plus your own emotional aspects, add to that the havoc which adolescence many times plays, and then you don't know what to do about it. All this, I think, it's very important for us in our classrooms that if we enter the classroom, it's important first to understand and then be understood. First to connect, then, I mean, this connection before curriculum is so very important for me. So
and that's great to hear. It's really interesting you say that, because so I totally agree. I think, and I've come to realize this as an adult, like if we're in a better mood and we're feeling happy, we're feeling good about ourselves, well, we can concentrate more, we're better to be around, we're friendlier, we can connect with each other better. And I think, I know there's some research around it, like there's the more that we, or I guess our well-being is intact or the happier we are, our academic results can be better as well. And a lot we said about, it's hard to compare about growing up now to when we grew up, because it is totally different. And sometimes it's hard to stop and remember that, that we're in a different time. So as educators, as adults, it's really important that we do try to put ourselves in young people's shoes and just try to understand it is a different time, and like it's totally different to how we grew up as well. So
I think isn't that empathy all about, you know? I mean, you've got to get into that. I do understand there are so many distractions, you know, with gadgets and mobiles and screens and things like that. And yes, there are areas where we also got to reflect and reform. But I think this basic understanding of the fact that when we are going in a classroom, we are going, you know, it's important for us as individuals to somehow leave our baggage outside and go inside where you have students who are anyway dealing with so many things, because you are as a role model. They're going to, you know, look up to what you do rather than just what you say. So that's going to be, you know, the way you put across yourself. So that's why it's important for us to be mentally more stable in order to, for them to be able to, for that 50 minutes or 1 hour or whatever, to forget other things and be with you and be in a little more positive state of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've just been speaking about how important it is that we are happy as people. And obviously that's not always possible, probably, to be happy every single minute of the day. But I think the great thing about it is we can practice. So well-being schools, whether that's happiness or whatever it might be, or gratitude or empathy, self-awareness, these type of skills that can definitely lead to happiness. So how do you go about, as a teacher at Shivnada, integrating well-being into the curriculum and daily practices?
I think, you know, one of the very important aspects which we do daily in our daily practice is, one of the basic things is to be able to be respectful to each other. You know, it's very important, in whether it's the support staff, whether it's teachers, each other in front of the students, or anyways, and to the students themselves. You know, I still remember one of my classes where I had started. I wished everybody, and when, you know, they if we are we're discussing a question, they reply back or they answer the question, I would say, "Thank you so much, ma'am or sir." And they were surprised. They said, "Why are you calling us ma'am?" I said, "Because you also deserve the same respect I would expect, isn't it?" So that goes mutually. I don't have to necessarily, I mean, this is not a title I'm giving you, but I think you also deserve the same respect as I do. So it's important that I do not consider myself somebody who's a cut above and you are there. No, because I am also here to learn as you are and with you. So I think it's very important. And then I think our very core values of our institution have got those things ingrained if in our everyday practice. We not just only talk about it, not just the leadership or our teachers or everybody, but we also practice it, you know. Like if you talk, as I said, respect and compassion is one of the very important ones. If you come to know that a child has gone through something which is emotionally or mentally not very good, even academically not very good, it's important for you to give support rather than, you know, to respond more than to react, to be able to, you know, understand, to listen, because many times it's only they just want you to listen, and that also helps a lot. So and be respectful for the fact that who they are. So I think acceptance for me is very important as a practice which we do. Very important to accept the individual the way he or she is without having any preconceived judgment or notions about it. And hence, in all this, it's very important also, which we always, you know, do and talk about, is not to, you know, shy away from showing your vulnerabilities. You know, it's very important to be vulnerable at many points. Only then can students or, you know, also be open to you and we share your vulnerabilities. So in our every, you know, for example, I mean, in our classrooms, it's not, I don't hesitate to take my own personal examples from my own personal life to connect with them or to relate to them. That puts across the idea of vulnerability to them. And they know that I'm open and transparent, and they will feel safe and then can talk with me. So then openness and transparency also is a very important core value of our institution. Now, and in through this, I'm not telling them not to focus on their work, but I'm telling them that I'm here to support you to the very end and in whatever way you want. So the commitment to excellence is also not gone. It's there as such.
Interesting. So I guess you mentioned about how that's embedded in the school. So that's the school culture, that really supportive environment, very respectful. How does that actually happen? Obviously, it doesn't happen overnight, but can you put that down to anything? Is it consistent practice over time? Has the leadership focused on it in staff meetings to make it a part of the culture, and it leads with the staff and it translates to the students? What would you put it down to?
I mean, if you see, as you're saying, our leadership is very, you know, very, very supportive and vocal about it. Now, every time we come back from a session break or anything, we have sessions, welcome sessions. Now, those welcome sessions are not just about hi, hello, and how are you? It's about this whole idea of how to go about, you know, interacting, well-being, meeting each other. Which recently, we had our head of school, Samir sir, doing this presentation on our values, on our value system, on our building cultures, you know, and a very, very important thing which came out from that. And if I may quote, he used this, it was a very important thing, that culture isn't built by documents, it's built by daily decisions. You know, it's values are, it's like values are not accessories, they are our anchors, right? We need to have deeper intentions to do that. And a very, very important quote which she shared with us, and I found it very important, and I thought I'll share it today. The great school culture is not an accident. It happens when we recognize that we all depend on each other and then work together to create supportive, caring conditions for everyone. Students, teachers, support staff, guests, everybody. David Guerin said about that. So I think, and we have every morning, we have mindfulness practice. Every morning, we have, in fact, in our daily classroom, I make it a point that, you know, before I start a class for a minute or two, I play some very mindful or very relaxing music. With the choice of the students or sometimes myself, so that they are relaxed. They know that, you know, they're not here to be in a situation where they are going to be tested every time. It's there that you are welcome and you be part of it, right? And we tend to celebrate, you know, differences. We tend to celebrate different abilities, right? So we have students who are of special education needs. So we celebrate those days. Like, for example, very recently we had the World Autism Day we celebrated. We all wore blue as a symbol of mark of it. And we don't say they are students with different abilities. We say they are students who have learning ways which are different from everybody. And that's how it is, isn't it?
I really like what you said then, Vic, is about like values aren't just a document. Like they need to be actually practiced. I think like I mean, I'm lucky to go to a lot of schools, and you do see the values around the school. And I know that some schools are really good at practicing the values and talking about it with the students, what does it mean, and doing different activities and strategies to practice. But not all do that. And I think that's something that's really important, that it's just not a document. It's got to be action to make that difference. And it doesn't happen overnight. Like, it's culture, it's over time. Like, it's day-to-day action, as you said. It's about behaviors of the staff that influence the kids and all the students. And yeah, I think it's one of those things that I think, like, when we think about those things about culture and I guess being in an environment that's very supportive, like, it doesn't happen overnight. Is that fair to say that that's what's happened at Shivnada?
Yeah, I mean, see, over a period of time, all these years since Shivnada came to me, till date, we've got some now practice. Now, for example, I think the very fact that we give our students autonomy to be able to learn what they want, especially in their creative pursuits, we have this entire section on the AHA, which is the whole idea of students can pursue whatever creative thing they want. Students have a voice, especially like through student council. Student council is a very important practice which we have, where students can put across their voice. They also develop leadership skills through that, right? We also have, it's like we have our what we call a program called the EFL, the Education for Life program, where we have modules on social emotional learning, where we have modules on leadership, where we have modules on even financial literacy for that matter, because these are life skills which students would need. And they would, now, for example, in leadership, our leadership team tends to talk about the 7 habits of highly effective people by Stephen Covey. The win-win part, we talk about the happiness quotient, the pursuit of happiness. We talk about even how superheroes can be good examples for us as leaders, because this reminds me of Mufasa, the Lion King, which came out, the movie which you've seen. And there's this one important scene which I thought stood out for me, when Mufasa reaches Malele, the promised land. And he removes the outsiders, and all the animals claim him as their king and all that. But he says, "No, I am not king. We are in this together. We are there together, and we always." I think this very factor, when you take your students together, we take your teachers together, we take your teams together, and build up something which actually tends to share and learn from mistakes rather than creating a shame, is what develops a lot of well-being culture for us. And I think, as a matter of policy, one matter of principle, our entire leadership team tells us that, even as teachers, professional dissent does not mean disloyalty. If professional discussion is not denial, and the path to truth lies in discussion, debate, and discourse, not just in acclamation. Professional dispute is not mutiny. So, and any organization without a little chaos is dead. So we got to have that. And we got to bring it to our students as well, to allow them to be able to feel that well-being to happen. And therefore, when we have our different programs, now very recently, we'll be starting something called, in Hindi we call it Sampark, but in English it means connect. It's a mentor-mentee program. Now, where teachers would be mentor for students, not just to look at those academic progression of support, but also to look at how emotionally we can support them, how we can create a culture of collaboration, connect, and communication, where students feel free to talk and tell us what went well, and even better if,
Absolutely, that's fantastic, and sounds like programs like that connect. I think what I've found is that people talk about it's the culture of the school. It's just have like well-being and positive education is things that happen every day, which it does. Like, it's true, but it's got to start somewhere. And I think, like, when you have initiatives like Connect, it builds onto what the school is doing. It's like an involvement. You might start it with some staff training, and then you build a really good staff culture, and then we start to implement in the classroom. So it's like a gradual, and over time, that's when I guess it really goes across the school. And I think that's one of the most important things, is that we got to start somewhere. Like, some schools, everyone's on their journey, different rates. So you've got different schools are in different I guess times of their journey when we're thinking about the well-being. So it's really interesting to see the progress of Shivnada over a number of years. And I just wanted to ask for some specific activities. I know that you mentioned before, I want to come back. You mentioned Vikas after a break. Students come back in after breaks and you have some conversations. Is that right? Is that one of the activities
Quite
that you do?
true. It's like, you know, we have things called the circle time with students, and we have our normal corridor conversations as well. And in the circle times, if I take an example, circle times is a time and a place which is a safe place where students can share whatever they feel like, you know, in the sense
Can I
that.
just ask, sorry, Vikas, to interrupt, how does your circle time structured?
Well, as it says, I mean, so our counselors are there, okay, teachers are there. Well, normally we would have a circle time with our counselors. We would also have circle time with our class teachers, the homeroom in charges. So I think that are two different levels where students would tend to connect, right? So when it happens, it's, you know, as the name says, you sit in a circle, but then you share. You are open to share your vulnerabilities with the counselor. You're open to share your things with your HRI. And it's important now, as an HRI, for example, it's yes, you connect, you talk, and you share. Now, then you have to be also mindful what are those things which you can handle, and where would you want to bring in the counselor or the head of school and other things. So that mindfulness is also there. Now, as I said about the mentor-mentee program, that's also the thing for teachers also to learn that. There's a difference between a mentor and a friend. So how do you differentiate that? Where would you, till what point of time would you want them to share information with you? And after a point, where would you know that you got to bring in, you know, professional people or counselors and others to into it? So this training is also very important for teachers. And I think circle times many times provide a very important thing. Even as teachers, we have circle times with our principal and head of school, where, you know, I still remember we have objects, very random, different objects kept in a circle, and we are asked to choose the object which we connect to the most, you know, one or two. And then based on that object, you know, whatever, suppose I chose a book, right? So why did I choose this book? What makes me connect with this book? And then, you know, my sharings of the session gone by, any positives, any things which I think need to work on, and things like that. So, and the fact that you start off with an essential agreement that whatever is said here stays here. So that again, it's a, you know, safe space for us. And our
Absolutely.
director principal, former director principal, Monica ma'am, had started a very good culture of circle time. In fact, I still remember how on every teacher's day, she would write individual cards to teachers, you know, with a note of motivation. And I mean, you know, I was to be in awe that how could she remember so many teachers individually and have those character, you know, characteristics and qualities and strengths and weaknesses in mind and talk about those. And its
Brilliant.
practice has continued different ways, but I mean, you know, this all these tell you that, you know, there are so much which can be done to ensure well-being as.
Absolutely. I love that circle time concept that you just explained then, because and I think one of the things about the podcast, we want to give teachers and educators ideas about what they can do, because as we said, we're all on different journeys, and when you hear something from someone else, you think, oh, that might actually work in my classroom as well. So that's a great example. And just one more question about the circle time. So forgive I get to give people an idea, how long do you allocate for that?
Well, it would actually vary, but yes, a minimum of around 50, 60 minutes would be
Yep.
there.
So it's like a lesson time.
Yeah, we could have a lesson time surely. And if there is something which we feel that it's flexible to go a little ahead, but we don't keep it with students for a very long thing because otherwise it goes out of purpose. So we could have different one, but then to minimum of a lesson time should be there surely.
Absolutely. Yep. Interesting. That's fantastic. I love that example. And I guess there's always going to be challenges. So when it comes to implementing like wellbeing programs, what are some of those challenges that you've seen come up, and what are some of those solutions that may I guess help overcome those challenges?
I think it's important to also be mindful that everybody might not be on the same page as you are. You know,
True.
the experiences, the stories, and the thought processes are all different. We all come from different stories. We all have our own stories. So I think one of the most important part, which is important but might not always happen, is being open to different aspects, open to different opinions, open to different ways of doing things. And with the different stakeholders and the kind of times we live in, it's important to it's a challenge to bring every for the same way you want to do things. It's not necessary because you will have people telling you, no, this is not right. You believe in certain things and you know that this is how it's going to happen, but there are going to be 10 people telling you, no, this is not how it should be. I feel this way. I feel. So how do you bring it to a common ground? Where do you so this whole idea of, and well, especially with parents' expectation being so much, children going through so many things, teachers also having so much to do. So I think it's very important, and I think to begin with, to identify people who would be really, really interested in this. Do with them, start with them, then make it trickle down slowly, that as it goes, the need-based thing. It can then go and then spread out. Many times what happens is, you do things with everybody, and that might not be of use to everybody for that point of time. So if you do it in stages, if you do it in, with a few and then spread it around by sending in the purpose, sending in the intent, sending in the long-term vision, and then the kind of impact it's been happening, that I think would help a lot because,
Absolutely. I totally agree. And funny you say that. I wrote a post that I'll be publishing on LinkedIn, and one of the points was about implementing a in well-being program is focus on the early adopters. So as you say, like
Yes,
the
I
three or
remember
four,
that.
yeah, the three
Yeah,
or
I
four
read that.
staff. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
100% right. Start with those the people who it does resonate with, and then you can build up from there. And that I totally agree with that. And I think that's a
Early
really important point.
majority also. I think after early adopters, you said the early majority who take it
Mm.
on, then it was the late one. So you start with the first two and then try to see if you can bring those laggers in between and then bring those together. Yes,
Yeah,
because it's
absolutely.
important that if we start with people who are driven, self-motivated, interested, they would actually take things a longer way. Because I think many times people's passions also rub out to others and they see the positive in it and they see how connected people can be. And I think I still remember an example of our HR head that is telling me that we were discussing on a topic of around related to history and geography. So she was telling me that you saying things in such an interesting manner. Why don't you talk to do let's start a culture where we have in our hubs also we tend to talk about such things. A hub culture where we discuss knowledge, discuss information, discuss each other's strengths. I think, and that if we do it hub wise, it can actually trickle out to a bigger audience and then go on even to our non-academic staff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you're right. And it's particularly when you're starting something new, like not it doesn't resonate with everyone, as you said, but if we're starting with a few people and it trickles out from there, we might be doing it in hubs, as you say, and then expand out from that situation also. But yeah, you make some really great points there, Vikas. And I just want to also ask you about where you see the future of well-being in school. So I guess with technology and different innovations happening quite quickly, what do you think are the next steps for well-being or positive education in schools?
I think we got to look at from two ways, if I feel. See, one, of course, is that technology and AI and all that is there. So we got to have to got to understand the dimension of that as well. But I think also we must not forget those people or those individuals who do not have access to such good examples of education and such good institutions. What about how do we deal with the mental health or the well-being of those children who are not very advantaged? Probably, maybe taking positive technology to them and taking education to them first, the importance of education, and then through technology, the importance of well-being. Because I think going for even today, even on going forward, technology has become such an integral part of us. It all depends on how we use it. It could be a tool, which would help us, and it could be a disaster as well. So it's upon us to integrate it from different dimensions, the use of technology. I think we have so many, well, I don't know whether this is right or not, but we have so many mindfulness apps which are there, which help us to, you know, we have smart wearables which help us to. But again, I think the human connect is above all as far as the well-being goes. And that human connect happens when we go out beyond our immediate this thing. We have an example of a project which our students do. They go to a place called Kargil in the northern heights of India. You know, it's the place which is beyond 13,000 feet. And we have, they go once a year, interact with the locals, teach the children there. And when they come back, they stay connected online with them to take classes with them and to get back and ask their well-being. So I think we cannot take out technology, but how well we integrate technology to take it forward as a tool of well-being is going to be a bigger factor. Because I think how do I put it? I mean, the fact that we got to embed well-being, and embed well-being in our daily lives, and as a holistic way, technology-driven is important, student-centered is important. So schools would have to shift, or will need to shift, from a just an academic-oriented environment to a nurturing, happy, healthy, and an emotionally sound environment. Because yes, academics might be important, but academic success is not the only success in life. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. You make some really good points about the technology. I think it's that balance of, like, I guess, teaching young people, and I guess modeling, and I guess sharing how you can use it in positive ways to enhance well-being. And as you mentioned, I just want to ask you about the situation in India with, I guess, access. So you mentioned about your group of students go up north in India, up in the mountain. Sounds like it's pretty high up in the mountains, perhaps, and teach students there. So is there quite a disparity in what some students get access to in India compared with other schools? Is that fair to say?
No, actually, see, the point is, it could have been at a point of time in the past, but seeing it now, the way we've progressed, the way things have expanded, the reach has, you know, it's very good to see the way, you know, the government and other agencies, education institutions, everybody's doing things to connect the entire country together.
Really?
You know, the building of infrastructure, the ability to be able to reach, connect with people, not only through roads, but also through technology. I think there's a very huge percentage of India which is connected with each other today. And even though, yes, geography and topography might sometimes come in as a hindrance, but I think we are trying to overcome it. And there are so many places where, despite the hurdles, we have been able to connect with people, and we are going a long way in doing that. So I surely do a very, very bright future of education, well-being, integrated with technology and people going forward. And I think if this is how we can progress, it'll be very good for our current and future generations as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I guess living in Australia a lot, and just hearing that, I guess the Indian or the country is like really getting like connected. It's such a good thing, and I hear that the government's doing wonderful things over there at the moment. And I do have a investment in the Indian Nifty 50, of the top 50 companies in India, and I think it's a really interesting place. And I have been there myself a couple of times, and always enjoyed my time there, and I love the culture, love the people, and the education system is there pretty good indeed. So, mate, I think that's a brilliant episode, and I really appreciate your time, Vikas. And what I liked is the activities and the ideas that you presented today, and hearing it from your perspective as a teacher, and also in episode 40 with your principal at Shivnada, Samia. So really good to hear both perspectives, and you both speak very similarly in what happens at the school. So obviously there's some fantastic things happening at Shivnada, and it's a great, sounds like a great culture, and Personally, I hope to come and visit there one day.
Absolutely, Yash. It's been wonderful speaking to you. I will be delighted to host you. Please feel free to come whenever you can. I think surely you very rightly said it's been 9 years for me here in SNS, and I think it's such a transition, such a good evolution we've had, the kind of culture we've created. There's so many days that when you actually, wake up and you want to come. So I think it's very important, that feeling that you want to come and you are respected, you are valued. That is so much important. Not only you're valued from the head of school, but also from our head of institutions, our CEOs, everybody, senior leadership, everybody values your contribution to the last person. So that is something so important.
That's brilliant.
Thank you
No,
for having me as a guest. I think it was wonderful talking to you. It's a privilege.
absolutely. And yeah, really appreciate your time. And I know it's ill just before school time in India there, so appreciate the time in the morning.
Well, as I said, this room, I got it. I didn't have to say, I just had to tell them that I have a recording. They said, please go ahead. It's all yours. So this kind
Excellent.
of culture is so very happy for us.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate your time, Vikas, and I'm sure that people get a lot of value from this episode.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Shit, surely.